We are going to dive into the subject of the history of music. I was actually quite shocked because I kind of thought I had the history thing figured out. I do not have the history figured out, and I learned so much from the history of music that I will never ever look at music the same again. And I hope that, I know you can't see the content I all saw, I guess. There's something about seeing stuff as well, and just seeing the shockingness of the devil within music. And hopefully the little bit that I have here can somehow awaken you to the desperate need of godly music within our society. I want to start out with, I don't know the music you listen to, okay? Don't know the music any of you listen to, and that's probably good. I am just going to say this like it is, and you might not be struggling in this area with music and what God wants, but you might know of someone who is. So once again, once you know something, God has given you a responsibility to open your mouth about it. So just bear that in mind. I'm not coming across harshly at you as a person if you struggle with this. We're all in this struggle together. You'll struggle with something and I'll struggle with something. It'll be two completely different things. So don't take things personal, please, this weekend. Just take it as something to actually pass on. The history of music. We can't start the history of music without first talking about before time or around the Garden of Eden and talking about the devil. We need to understand Satan before we can actually, if we want to understand the history of music or understand music and the hold that Satan has on music within society and within, I believe, believers. Satan has us by the throats. And I tell you, I've cleaned up my listening just in the past month simply because of what I've learned just in tonight's thing. It's not going to have a whole lot of necessarily Bible, but we need to understand the history so that we know where we're going with this or where it came from. So we talked about God, and now we come to the subject of Satan. How much do you know about your adversary, the devil, who walks around as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour? We're not meant to be afraid of the devil, but at the same time, we need to have a fear of the devil, I do believe. It'll keep us from going places and doing things and listening to things. If we have the fear of God and understand who the devil is. Number one, who created Satan? Who created Lucifer? Was he there with God? What is the doctrine of Satan? This is something that I wish our churches talked about. If your ministries, if you know ministries, if your dad's in the ministry, talk about God, talk about Satan. Talk about these people, because they're the ones, they're not people, but talk about these beings. They're the ones that are warring for our souls. And if we understood both of them, we could see them so clear in our day-to-day lives. And there are so many things, I guess, this past week that I've looked at, just viewing online, just everything is like, yeah, that is Satan so through and through that I'd have never thought before. Satan is the father of lies, and the truth is not in him. If he is going to get you on any subject, he's going to make you believe it is right. Way back in the Garden of Eden, it starts there. It starts before this, but I'm going to bring this in right now. Back in the Garden of Eden, the first thing out of the devil's mouth was a question. The first question in the Bible was from Satan. Yea, hath God said? Come on, Eve. God isn't like you think he is. He wants you to be happy. Have we talked about that before? He wants you to enjoy life. Look at this fruit. I mean, you're depriving yourself if you didn't take of it. And then what did he offer Eve? Life. He offered her an abundant life. If you take of this fruit, you will see things and experience things like you've never experienced before. And Eve fell. Adam did too. Hang on to that thinking. Hang on to what Satan told Eve, because it's going to pop up in this whole evening, this whole last session here. Good grief. Colossians 1:16, "For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist." Did you know Satan was created for God? He is the enemy of God. And God, in his all-knowing power and wisdom, created Satan full well knowing that he would go against God and create what we have today. God created Satan as well for himself. So easy to think that Satan's down in hell. You know, oh, he's the bad guy in hell, and that's where all his demons reside. And no, he's on this earth. He's not in hell. He hasn't tasted hell. He has no idea. He has a bit of an idea, but he has not experienced hell. No one's experienced hell, and Satan hasn't either. And Satan is out to get you to go with him because he knows he's going there. Ephesians 6, "Be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." How many times I've read that verse? It just goes over. I've been praying the protection of God on our family this week because I have seen so much satanic content and played so much satanic content. Folks, Satan is real. Satan is so real. If we could have our eyes unscaled and actually see the beings that are around this world, see Satan and all of him, I can't imagine how our lives would change. God is just as real. Okay, so don't be scared of Satan and all of his, because we have a God on our side. But we cannot give ourselves to the devil and to what he wants. Was Satan always, we all know this, Satan was not against God all of since he was created. We don't really know when Satan was created. Some people have the days figured out when, you know, but was he before the creation? Was he during the creation? And come and correct my theology, I'm just going to say I don't know. Because a lot of places they say they don't know. And who can be certain? And are you going to hell knowing if Satan was created on the third day or the sixth day or whatever? God created him. Isaiah 14, 12 to 17 talks about... That's quiet. Talks about the lament of Lucifer being cast out of heaven. Why did God create him in the first place? What was the reason for Lucifer being up in heaven? Lucifer was God's right-hand man. Lucifer was in charge of, he embodied the glory of heaven. He was the one that worshipped, that led the worship to God. Verse 11, "Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee." Did you know Lucifer was like a musical being? He had vials, like, vials is like a string, is like a flute kind of thing. It's like a, some people say it was kind of more harpish, others were more, it's more like a flute. But he had this built, like the sound of thy vials. He had music about him. We're not 100% sure. We can't be 100% sure. But he had music about him. "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart," and listen, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. That's very interesting because in Job it talks about the hanging his heavens in the north or something like that. His throne room is in the north or something like that in Job. Very interesting how it talks about the north. Did you know that scientists, when they, this is off subject, but when scientists, there's like this gaping spot up north in the northern sky that they can't, they don't know where it goes or what it does. Interesting, it's just a little side note I learned. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. What do we talk about with today's society wanting to be like God? They are God. Satan wants each one of us to pretend we're God. I make my own decisions. I decide what I want to do. We have iPads and we have iPhones, and it's so interesting to me that it's like a bite of fruit. I'm still wondering what is with the apple and the bite out of it from Apple. Have you ever thought about that? Wonder, just curious. So off subject though. Yet thou should be brought down to hell to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that made the earth to tremble? That did shake kingdoms? That made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof? That opened not the house of his prisoners? I think we're going to be shocked when we get to heaven and realize just who this tempter was. I don't think we're going to realize how small he was as much as we're going to realize how close to God he looks like. If you go to Ezekiel 28, talks about Lucifer, and he had pretty stones all over his entire being. And I believe like he reflected God. When God shone on him, God is light, right? But when God shone on these stones and this music and everything, he was a beautiful being. Lucifer held light and shone light and radiated light. Is that not interesting? Because he said, says in the Bible that he will come to you as an angel of light. Lucifer is light. Lucifer is close to what God is, but he's not God. I don't think he was this beautiful angel that God cast out of sky and he turned into some devil with horns and a tail and wings. I think we're going to be shocked at how pretty Lucifer actually is. This is me talking. But I don't think we're going to be like, oh, he's such a little guy. Lucifer was a big deal up in heaven, which is the reason he decided to exalt himself above God. And we all know the story. God would not have it because God will not allow anything above him. That's where the history, that's where Satan started his whole thing, warring for our souls. Lucifer was in charge of the worship in heaven. He was in charge of the worship of the other angels to God. Is it any wonder, have you ever wondered, why our worship is so skewed down here? You have to be living under a rock to not realize how music has probably, the subject of worship and music has divided more churches than any other thing on this planet. There have been countless churches divided, and then also individuals divided between themselves within the same church. It's so sad, but God, I believe the devil has a full grip and knows that if he can pervert our thinking about worship, just change a little bit of truth. If you think about, I need to stop talking here, get on with the subject. But if you think about, I want to bring this in. If you think about poison, we all have heard this. Rat poison contains so little poison. It's a lot of good. How do you think Satan gets us? Do you think he gives some wild idea out there and we're like, that's from Satan right there? Or do you think he takes the truth and he just twists it just a little bit? Because as soon as the truth gets twisted a little bit, it's no longer truth. It's a lie. Just like as soon as you put a little bit of poison inside your apple pie that you're going to eat for supper, it becomes all poison. And that is what Satan has done to our music. A lot of things, our worship especially, he has switched it just a little bit. He's an angel of light. He is going to deceive us in the most small ways he possibly can. And you do a bunch of small things, and all of a sudden you got people doing something that if they had done right at the start, we'd have been, oh, that's from Satan. Remember, we move through our Christian life. We're always moving. Lucifer was a very proud person. Very, very proud person. And Jesus rebuked the disciples when he said, the disciples in Luke 10, they returned with joy because even the devils were subject to them. Even the demons were subject to me. They were feeling pretty good. I'm not all powerful, but I had power over these, you know, demons. They were pretty happy about that. And I am going to turn there really quick because I believe this is so important. This pride thing. Jesus says to them, this is what Jesus responds, and he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. This was his response to what they had said. Behold, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing by any means shall hurt you. Notwithstanding, in this rejoice not that the spirits are subject unto you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. I believe that little passage there is so deep. We do not become proud for what we can do for God. Remember, God doesn't need you. God has chosen to use you. He chose to use the disciples. But pride, as soon as pride enters our worship, God wants nothing to do with it. If we have pride in our worship, if we have us, ourself, in our worship, and remember, worship isn't just for church. Worship is every aspect of your life. If we have a speck of pride in there, God doesn't want any of that. God is a jealous God. And that's what Satan had. And that's what Satan, I believe, is doing with our music, is getting us to believe that lie. I am going to skip where music comes through in the Bible here, and I will be talking about it tomorrow. I just decided because of time. We are going to wildly go through this. So, there was music in the Old Testament. There was music in the New Testament. There's that argument that all music is kind of silent in the New Testament. It is there, and we will discuss that tomorrow. And then the early church happened, okay? Now, one thing we have to remember is that the synagogues, the temple was where they had the musical instruments and singers, like thousands. They had 3,000 singers at one time. 3,000. So the center in the square in Waterloo holds 2,000 people. So imagine another 1,000, another half of that, singing in adoration to God. That was temple worship, and it was just the Levites. God had a very, very strict plan for who could sing. You couldn't just be an Israelite in audition for the choir. It didn't happen. God was very, very specific about who, and it had to come from a certain family of the Levites, certain few families. It wasn't just any of the Levites. God was very, very specific. Why? Why do you think God was like that? Think about it. In the synagogues where they taught, so not everyone could come to the temple because Israel's so big. So there was these synagogues where they taught, where there was the teaching. There they had singing, and the early church adopted that into their worship services, the more of the synagogue-style worship when it came to singing and singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. So the instrumentation wasn't actually in the church, so to speak, or in the synagogues before the early church. And the early church kind of adopted that that along the way. And we'll talk more about that later, about instrumentation and whether or not it's good or bad. And then it's kind of dark about what happened with music. They call it the Dark Ages for a reason. No one really knows what happened. It was enough to be distorted. Music was kind of distorted in the fact that it was starting to be more chants and it wasn't what you call singing. It's more monotone. If you think of a Gregorian chant, That's more or less what music was like. But then we come to the 450 to 1550. This is a very, very broad range, but it's called the medieval or the Middle Ages. And that was the beginning of the basic system of musical notation. That was when notes were starting to be created and time signatures were started to be created. And all of this, and one person would come up with ideas of ways to structure music out, and someone would build on that 100 years later. And kind of like things happened in other areas of life. But music was very much evolving, shall I say. I don't like that word, but it was evolving. It was getting to where you could actually put it on paper. Before, Moses taught the children of Israel a song, or God said, teach them this. Fathers were to teach children. It was very much handed out that way. And it was the beginning of polyphony, which is many melodies happening at the same time. And we'll talk about that tomorrow as well. Polyphony is very, very, very exciting. Just the fact that you can have 10 melodies all at once within one piece. And why is polyphony so important to God in our music? Music was an integral part of worship in both pagan circles and Christian circles. Okay? Music is, we are created, we haven't even touched this, which I was going to, but we are created in God's image. We are musical beings. God is a musical God. Okay? There isn't in any culture you go that has not heard of Christ or God, there is music. It is something that is deep within us. And so the pagans and the Christians both had music for their worship services. And Satan had a sizable church back then, just as much as the Christians. But there were only two types of people. You were either a pagan or you were a Christian. Today there's that way as well, but it's a lot more muddied. And then we come to the Renaissance Ages, which was about 1450 to 1600. It means the rebirth. Many changes were starting to take place there. Man was starting to really, really, not come to, but starting to realize, they were starting to use their creativity. And music was created specifically. We have Vivaldi. We have some of those really older composers that were able to write large numbers of music. Secular music and sacred music sounded the same. You didn't notice the difference between the two when it came to, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, those of you that are musical, nothing to do with God, or Corelli, I think, had some pieces from the Psalms, but it was very much the same. Music was very, very melodious. It did not have very rhythmic, but it was very melodious. Music was largely an instrument of the church back then. You would have different churches employing these people, or church and state was a lot more together back then. And so if you were part of the state, you were part of the church, which you'd have your own choir or music group. The purpose being that music was looked on as an aid to worship, which is why it was so much a part of the church. Music didn't happen. Music was for the fun of it, but music was looked on very much as an aid to bring our souls to God, to help us worship God, as opposed to being the worship of God. Then we go to the Baroque music, 1600 to 1750, and it means bizarre. It means many things were happening. And if you think about society, just so you know, I'm going to probably carry this into tomorrow morning, because there's no way I'm going to get through this. And I will adjust the rest here, but this is so important. It means bizarre. It means things were starting to change musically in the music scenes, in the world. Men were starting to get new ideas and open up. And musicians were starting to realize, they embraced the idea that music could move the listener to a real and physical way. Before, when there were chants, you just didn't feel it, But if you listen to Vivaldi, just for instance, and the Four Seasons, and the way that he used, there's a thunderstorm in the summer one. There's a picture of a fox hunt in the fall one. There's a picture, or there's also, you can picture snow falling. So there's very much, he used music as a way of as a language. He used music as a language. And a lot of more other people were doing that as well. You had Bach and Handel and some of those big giants who put music to the Bible and did, or put the Bible to music and did a lot of things like that. America was established by then, or becoming established, and back then they just had a hymn book. And it sounded very much like our traditional four-part hymns. They were very old, from, more from like Martin Luther and the Reformation. But it was more hymn. There wasn't necessarily... The local music of the time was pagans, Indians, drumming on their drums, calling up spirits, that sort of thing. So the music, there was kind of like two scenes. Like America was kind of adopting Europe a little bit more, because that's where they came from. Then we have the classical era, 1750 to 1800. Piano was used much more here. Beethoven and Mozart and some of the big people that used it. Beethoven broke so many pianos in his life because pianos were a lot weaker then, and he had an assistant. He was half deaf, and that was for free. Music was seen more as an innocent luxury. People had more pianos in their homes. They could afford it. So people started playing more music. You know, it wasn't just for the lofty royal courts of the day. Everyone could enjoy this. Because before, you had to go to the court in order to enjoy music. You didn't bring it to your house. You had singing, but you didn't have any instrumentation necessarily back then. Music in America was also the same, a lot more piano and folk music and just and more free living life. But they didn't have instruments in their worship services still. But then we have the Romantic Age. That's in the 1800s to 1900s. And what's interesting to me is how music, and I don't believe it's the other way around, I believe music brought about culture. Okay? Culture did not bring about music as much as music brought about culture. And with these changing music scenes, if you go through history, and there's no way I can cover it all, but if you go through history, and I wish I was a Superman, but if you had art, if you just started looking at art and the way they drew pictures, the way they had pictures back then, the art of the Renaissance time or the Baroque period was very, very structured. You had a ship at sea, and it was magnificent and huge and beautiful and made sense to you. It looked like art. And then you moved into like more of the Romantic time now here, and it was starting to be more of paintings of people and paintings of, before it was more nature. That's more people, and you'd have someone slouched over at the piano kind of thing, and they'll have like toys or something on the ground, you know, like or a puppy or distraction, more, it was more moving around. Things were changing within the art world as well. So it's society kind of moved along, but I believe the music led it that way. There's nothing wrong with the way it was going. But remember what I said, everything moves. You don't stand still in one spot. So the Romantic Age, characterized by using music to tell stories. You have louder music and then you have soft music all within the same composition. People were very much more feeling it a lot more than before. It was like, this is music, you know, kind of thing, back in the Baroque and Renaissance. Some big shifts, though, were happening. Nature was seen in a less idealized way in the fact that you didn't look at nature so much and be like, wow, there's a God, like they did back then. Because we have to, it's so hard to wrap our mind around this, but when they were, it was like pagan or Christian. You were one or the other. And when you looked at creation, it was like, it drew you in worship to God. And now there's a whole lot more ideas. Well, where did, like, through this time, Charles Darwin started. And he changed a lot when it comes to the musical scene. And that changed the way people started looking at creation and looking at humans. And where did we come from? And all of a sudden, music started, it was seen as a less idealized way to describe God. It was less of a model of perfection and more of a mysterious power. What could, if I change this and I do this and I don't really use the system that music is meant to have, what would happen, kind of thing. And it continues. The slaves in the 1800s started in America, and Charles Darwin is, some places say that Charles Darwin has nothing to do with the slaves in America, but he believed that black people were not fully human, and so I do think that's where that came from, a lot of that thinking. Slave trade started, they brought with them from Africa, they started bringing them to the U.S., to to America. And they started, African culture was very, very ungodly, very voodoo, very, voodoo is like, so there's Hinduism, which isn't, doesn't seem quite as, it's all satanic, but Hinduism isn't as satanic. Like voodoo is like Satan's religion, if I can say that. I know Hinduism is as well, and mysticism and all that stuff, but voodoo is like, when you say voodoo, that's like Satan's church kind of thing. So they're very deep into this culture, bringing back dead people. Hinduism is more, you know, myself and be good and do good to people, whereas voodoo is very much into the spirit world of sides of things and where that all came from. So they came very wrapped heavily within this, and they brought it to America, naturally. And I'm not blaming Africans, okay? This is their culture. It was within the Indians of the U.S. as well, or up here, Native Americans. If you listen to Chile, the drum styles of Chile, they have the same kind of voodoo. China has the same kind of voodoo. Pagan was pagan back then. And that's the way it was, that's what they all worshiped the same way. They all were very spirit-bound. So just the reason, I guess, black people get the bad rap for rock music maybe is because they happen to be the slaves. If it would have been someone from Chile, they would have probably brought in their culture. So just so you know, I'm not have anything against them. Once they came to American soil, the slave owners took all their stuff. They wanted nothing to do with this strange ritualistic music stuff, and they took it all and got rid of it, they went through a lot, the African people did. But the Americans, who remember, were pretty Christian, didn't want any of this. They understood what it was. They understood what it was back then, and they took it away from them. In 1800s, when the church was being formed there, the drums were forbidden in church. They did not, the Protestants did not want anything to do with syncopation or drums. So, because the black people did no longer have their way of performing music, they started, you can go down in New Orleans, there's Congo Square. And Congo Square is where a lot of things happened. This was the gathering place for the slaves. And back then, it was so ingrained within them that they learned how to do tap dance. They beat out the rhythms with their feet, and hence the tap dance was invented. That's when that happened, and it was because they didn't have their drums and their whatever they used, but they used logs and they used the means that they had. It is here that their music went through a metamorphosis, because once Congo Square happened and they were tap dancing the Catholic Church, the Catholic Church kind of felt sorry for them a little bit and said that, okay, well, we'll let you do the tap dance or whatever. We'll let you do some of it, but you can't have everything. So it was kind of very much changing when it comes to the music scene. It was changing. So the Catholic Church blessed it, but they needed to modify it a little bit. So what is voodoo music? Like, what does it sound like? What is it? I had a clip on my computer, which I might play tomorrow, depending. But John H. Steele, in his book, World of the Unexplained, explains the followers of voodoo seeks to incorporate a Lao, or a demon, into himself by writhing and leaping through a dance while drums bang out a complex rhythm. Remember complex. When just the right rhythm is found for a demon, the dancer takes it up and the demon enters his soul. The religion is strictly Dionysian, or sensual. It's very, very sensual with the way they do things. That's how they get possessed, through that. Pagan religion always had three things, and this is something to remember. It always had sex, it always had mind-altering drugs, and it always had hypnotic music. Those three things were very important within the voodoo pagan religion. And what do we have in rock and roll? Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You hear it all the time. They pride themselves of that. Michael Venture, in his book, Hear That Long Snake Moan, said, the tribal people religious worship is seen as a bodily celebration that is bodily celebration. That is why the rhythm or beat in their worship music is so accentuated. The goal of voodoo religions is to experience their bodies, the crossroads of the physical and the spiritual worlds. And we're going to talk tomorrow about what rock music actually does to your brain. It does something very scary. You have a frontal lobe in your mind up here, and God has that placed in your mind for a reason, in your brain for a reason. It is the point where it's what you reason with. It's what you make decisions with. It's the thing that tells you not to do this or that, not to go sleep with someone. It's the thing that stops you, that part of your brain. And we're going to talk about that tomorrow. But just remember the crossroads. It's very interesting. They understood that your mind could be bypassed. And once your mind is bypassed, they can make you do anything. You can do anything. Richard Hodges said, during these rituals that still take place in the Congo and Yorubaland, the intricate layers of multiple rhythmic drumming are considered the primary source of occult power. So we have polyphonic rhythms, layered rhythms. It was like a lot of rhythms all happening at once. It drives your brain nuts. Psychology Today said in 1985, musical rhythms affect both our hearts and our brains. One road to arousing a range of agitated feelings, tense, excited, sometimes sexual, is through pronounced and insistent rhythms artfully used to heighten the sexual tension. Drumming may produce these powerful effects by actually driving the brain's electrical rhythms. Rock music is so powerful. So powerful. I can't stress it enough. Today, there are nervous breakdowns in people. There are shakings. There's nervousness. How many people do you know that have anxiety attacks? I know of a few people that have anxiety attacks. Folks, it's because of this. Doctors are actually starting to realize that once you take rock music away, and we're gonna talk about what rock music actually is, once we take that away from people, this stuff all subsides. Could it be that they're under demonic influences? I think very much so. Michael Venture, again, he says, hear that long snake moan. He said, in tribal ceremonies, there was no audience. Everyone became a participant. But in Congo Square, so this is back to Congo Square, African music was put into a Western form of presentation. So before, when they had the tribal dances, everyone was around dancing and getting possessed. Now they started, this is where music was changing. It was starting to be more of a spectator thing. I could come in there and watch them do their thing. So it was becoming more of a show. African music was put into a Western form of presentation. Now the religious voodoo African element was still present, but it became a secret within the music rather than the object of the music. So before, in the tribes, when you were drumming and doing all your stuff, it was to bring the demons. It was to get them into you. That was the reason of it. Now, because of onlookers and spectators, it became more of a secret thing. They didn't necessarily tell you what was going on. So you go to Congo Square to experience this, you didn't necessarily know what they were doing. And it went from there. In the 1940s, blacks started turning to Christ. And started, you've read books about some slave owners actually being Christians and changing the lives of black people. But they started turning to Christ and started their own black churches. That's where black churches started back in the 1940s. Some turned away from drums and understood the power that was there and didn't have anything to do with it. Others incorporated them in their worship services and didn't really care. They would sing the same hymns as the whites, but with shouting and beating out counter rhythms on tambourines, gourds, and logs. Remember, they didn't have their drums necessarily. The white people still did not give them. Eventually bringing about the Holy Flesh movement. Now, this is very interesting to me. So back in the 1840s, because of the voodoo element of music that got brought into churches, the black people, those churches, the churches that didn't have it, didn't have the beat or drums in their voodoo element of their worship service, did not have this. But the ones that did, it brought about the Holy Flesh movement, or known as the Holy Ghost. So now we have this whole spirit thing. And it got taken as Christianity. And it's funny today, there's still those churches around. It was a lot bigger, I think a bigger thing in the 1950s and 60s. My dad talks a lot about it when he was a younger person. That it was taking the church by storm kind of then. But that's where that was born from. It was taking satanic powers and switching them into Christian powers. All of a sudden now, instead of satanic demons, it was the Holy Ghost. Does that happen? Remember, Satan is an angel of light, and he will deceive. Back in 1875, that's when Dwight L. Moody would have been doing his big meetings in Chicago and places, and Ira Sankey was his musician, quote-unquote, the one that led the hymns and wrote a lot of hymns. Dwight L. Moody understood the power of this music and did not allow it, Ira D. Sankey as well, which was writing hymns and stuff was part of their way of counteracting what was going on. There were a lot of churches warning against it back in those days. In 1859, Dixie music started to take off. Now, this is like the earliest form of rock. Voodoo was rock too, but it was very noisy. Dixie was starting to get now like more swing and fun, and you could have some fun with your music now. It wasn't in the churches necessarily, but Dixie music, and if I could play you a sample, you'd laugh. It's so calm. It's like, it's crazy. Thomas Edison invented the sound recorder in 1877, and this is where music took off. Because before, if you think about it, you had to actually go to a concert or go to someone that was playing a guitar or someone who had to know how to play music in order for you to experience music. You can just listen to music anywhere, which also then created, it shortened the oceans. All of a sudden, European music was coming over to the U.S. because there's so many years of before it had to come by boat, and who knows if they would have brought it along the same way, you know, taught it the same way. So now all of a sudden, rock music was heading back to Europe, and Europe was bringing their new culture over here, or their advanced culture, I should say. And so music was starting to really change. This is where it took off, because all of a sudden, you could just listen to anything. And, hey, look at this new idea. And you send it over to Europe, and Europe catches on to it. And so it was morphing into a giant. Thomas Edison's invention helped a lot of other things too. It helped spread Christianity as well. It wasn't all bad. In the 1900s, artists started using this new technology to enhance their compositions. So now they could actually play this music and sing with it. You could start doing things. You didn't have to have five people playing your instruments while you were the singer, or vice versa. You know, now you could play and sing at the same time. You could do all kinds of things. Aleister Crowley, in the 1900s, and this man is going to, you need to understand this man. He's the wickedest man in the world. This is what society calls him. This is what Christians call him. Secular society calls Aleister Crowley the wickedest man in the world. Why was he so wicked? What made him the wickedest man in the world? He founded the religious philosophy of Thelma. And Thelma is a being, or a name for a devil, or a demon, I guess I should say. And he wrote, quote-unquote, the Book of the Law. Okay, he was starting to change the way music started looking within society, his belief system. He took that voodoo rhythm and started analyzing it. Remember I said music changes society. That's, it changed him. He was a musician. He didn't do a lot of musical stuff, but he was the one that took that voodoo and was like, there's power in this. And he has so much belief in the power of music. He wrote the Book of the Law. He states, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Remember what we were talking about earlier. I will ascend into heaven. I will be like the Most High. I will be like God. I will do what I want to do, and no one is going to tell me. Folks, that is satanic. That is what the satanic church runs on, is do what thou wilt. It's going to come up. It's going to pop up all over this. But do what you want. He says the author of this book was a different entity of himself who he, I can't remember writing. Oh, who he said was his personal holy guardian. So he had an out-of-body experience, wrote this book. Some being wrote this book while he wasn't there. And he came back and he was, his book talked about yoga and Eastern mysticism as well as lots of other religions that we kind of, yoga doesn't seem like such a bad thing anymore. I don't know if you're, maybe it's just me, but yoga exercises, actually good exercises. They're actually good moves, but it's what's behind it. Remember, Satan comes as an angel of light. He expressed views about sex that were so radical, we cringe. Secular society cringes at what he viewed, the things he talked about sex and how it should work and how, I'm not going to even go there. He stated he was in revolt against the moral and religious values of his time. He hated Christians. He absolutely hated them, which was part of the reason that he was going to indoctrinate society so heavily. He was a Satanist. He had voodoo, had satanic, he had given himself over to the devil. Aleister Crowley is one of the greatest heroes of many musicians and entertainers. Did you know that his face appears on a lot of records today? He is held in very high regard. He is like Jesus Christ to us within the musical society. They hold him in a very, very high place because he was the one that started this entire music movement because he was used of music. He let demonic powers from music get into him, and he changed. He has a whole philosophy on music. He understood the power of music and how powerful rock music was, especially. He is the father of modern-day Satanism. So the Satanic Church of today, he is their father. He was denounced by the popular press. They wanted nothing to do with him. Of his day, he was, I said he was called the wickedest man of the world. His mom called him the beast. Think of that. His mom wanted nothing to do with him. He's like a devil. Stay away from that man. He desired to use music to bring on the New Age. He is the founder of the New Age movement. We've heard about this. The New Age movement is in our churches, in our Mennonite churches. Believe me, it is. And we'll get into that later. He desired to use an army of youth to indoctrinate the do what thou wilt philosophy. He wanted to use you and I as young people. Why? Because he knew he could. He knew that if he had the youth, he had the nation. And he knew that if he could control the music, then he could control the youth, and he could control the nation. He knew how powerful this was. He taught that one could become a genius in music through practicing Satanism. So, the reason that musicians wanted him so badly, or love him so much, is because he told all of the musicians of the day that if you believed in Satan and sold yourself to the devil, Satan would give you all of the power that you wanted. He would make you famous. He would make you rich. He would make your music something, and he would make people want you. That was his mentality. And that is the reason, my friends, that so many popular record artists of today love Aleister Crowley. And we'll talk tomorrow about what these artists are doing today that are so satanic. They have asked Satan into their life to become that popular musician. Have you ever wondered how a musician of today becomes popular when it sounds so ugly? There are musicians out there that can't sing, and yet they're like flying, they're highest on the charts. They can't sing. They literally can't sing. I call them rappers. I honestly think they just don't have a voice and they don't know how to do anything better. Just kidding. But a lot of the musicians, the big famous ones, there's a reason that they're famous, believe me. Robert Johnson started after this whole music scene collided, and Robert Crowley, and he is the founder of blues music. Now, this is where things start changing. But blues music, which led eventually to rock and roll, and it's black. Robert Johnson was a black guy, and a lot of the rock music started from black people starting it. His songs often tell of his personal deal he made with the devil. He was such a bad musician that he'd go into the bars with his guitar and want to play or whatever, and they kick him out. They're like, "You're so bad. Get out of here. You can't sing. You can't." He was persistent though. He'd like walk into I don't know how many bars, and they kept kicking him out. Finally, he was so annoyed and so angry that he decided he was going to sell his soul to the devil to get that fame and to get that fortune and to get that money that he was craving. If you would listen to his music, you'd be shocked, because it's nothing. It really isn't. He went down in Louisiana. His songs often tell of his personal deal he made with the devil. He was a bad player. He was gone for 9 months in Louisiana, and he met Satan at the crossroads. Remember about Aleister Crowley, or was it Aleister Crowley? Someone else saying that voodoo music, once you're at the crossroads, the demons can come in. Robert Johnson went, there's actually a monument in Louisiana, you can see it. It's called the Crossroads, it has guitars on the top of it. You can actually go see where Robert Johnson made a personal deal with the devil so that he could become famous and he could get wealth. Remember what Satan said to Eve? If you eat this fruit, you can know all things. You can have all of the wealth you want. You can have all of the power you want. You'll be all-knowing. His lie has not changed. He came back after he made the deal with the devil, and he revolutionized the way we look at music and revolutionized music completely. He is the father of rock and roll, pretty much. Someone who made a deal with the devil, who sold his soul to Satan, and sadly, he died that way. Highway 61 and 49, the cross sections of Highway 61 and 49, if you want to go look at it. Pray over that spot. but there's a memorial there. It's funny what we idolize, though, as a country, as a nation. That shouldn't be anything that we shouldn't even know where that is, really, if you think about it. But there's a monument there. The blues was looked upon by society as the devil's music. So outside society, when Robert Johnson played, that was the devil's music. Everybody knew that. That didn't want to part with it knew that that was the devil's music. It was, whenever that music played, there was drinking, there was womanizing, there was gambling, there was drugs, there was violence, there was depravity. People did things with women that they had no idea they could do. Remember about our brain, bypassing our brain? Music. This music does this. He said, "My music did something to women that I can't explain, but I loved it." He was having a good time. He was having a very good time. He started jazz. And I don't know if you know jazz very well. I don't know how many of you listen to jazz. I can't stand it. But it's basically voodoo rhythm. Exactly just about like it was back in when the Africans came across. And music just played at random times. It has some structure. But that's what jazz consists of. Blues music then would be more rock. The rhythm is more rock and more structured vocal, or more structured melody. It's not just like all over the place and flying around. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I could play jazz on the piano, no problem. You don't need a PhD to play jazz. That was a joke. Irving Berlin started making it white with his big band merging with rhythm and blues. So you had blues, you had jazz, you had rhythm. You combined the two, you had rhythm and blues. Irving Berlin was the one who made it popular within the white culture now, because before it's a very black thing. It was something that Africans did a lot more of. Whites were starting to get, enjoying it. And if I was here, I would play you a clip of Jesus Met the Woman at the Well. It is pretty bad. It's just very unrespectful. And Jesus, in the whole song, Jesus is talking to this woman, who's like, "Woman!" Like, I can't even do it. It's like, they like grate their voices so bad, like just guttural and, "You've had five husbands," kind of thing. 1947, Crowley dies. But he doesn't die. He lives on. And I think that's where I'm going to call a close. It is 9:30 already. Tomorrow we will delve a little bit more into music, this rock and roll scene. Where did it take us? How did we get contemporary Christian music? This is where I'm going to step on people's toes. I know you might not listen to it. I know you know someone who does. I've been to SMBI long enough, and what hurts me so much is seeing young people adopting this music, but it's because we don't know. Tell your ministry you want a message on music. Young people. Parents, we have young people that want more. We have young people that want to experience Christ in a greater capacity than what our churches experience Christ. Why is that? When we read what this is my king, what he is, do you think our youth, do you think, are we feeling that within our churches, within our everyday life? Why are we wanting more? Why is this an issue? And what hurts me is this is not becoming an issue anymore. Satan has got the foothold into our Mennonite circles like you wouldn't believe. I can go to SMBI and there is maybe two to three people that have the same view on music that I do. It is shocking, and they will argue, and they will argue, and they will argue. I did a talk on at SMBI both times I was there as faculty. Every single time, it created a huge uproar within the dorms, and within, all of a sudden people started hating people, and we literally had to have a talk to talk about that. You know, that it's divisive, though, because it's a very personal thing. We all love music so much. If you just came up to me and said, I don't like your style of music, I think it's wrong. You know, if you're in the ministry, if you know of someone in the ministry, ministers, speak about this, but speak about it not on opinion. As soon as we speak about anything on opinion, it falls on deaf ears. But our youth want something more. And youth, I don't know what you listen to, but I'm proud of you guys. Because I know that there are youth that are striving to be what God wants them to be. We're just blinded. That's all. That's just it. Satan is still Satan, and he is going to work in the church until Christ returns, and he is going to change our minds. He comes as a deceptive, he comes as a thief, and he is going to rob us of Christ's glory so that we will exalt our glory. I don't have a song necessarily. I'm going to leave it at that. It's such an ungodly place to leave. Focus on the first message, and just realize, look at things differently. Just look at life differently. I challenge you, be into this book. I can't tell you how much this book has meant to me in the past 2 months. To my shame, I have let this book sit far too long. But his riches are so rich, and you have it right here. We don't need an experience. We don't need to put on music. We don't need to put on some worship thing so that I can elevate myself. No. If you read this book, this is the way you will find God. This is the way God speaks to you. God doesn't speak to you any other way than through this book. Yeah. Just be careful. Our sins, our heart is wicked, desperately wicked, and who can know it? I feel like we sometimes go, well, I feel God's directing me in this part, but we forget about this book. So we kind of go here and we go there, and yeah, God's leading me in this direction. I feel God leading me in this direction. I feel God leading me in this direction. But we're not in this book, and so we just feel our way through Christianity. Are we worshiping a false God? We'll continue this discussion tomorrow. Thank you so much for staying awake. I went 15 minutes over time, if you want to know. And I will try to do better tomorrow. But bless you. And thank you for coming, and I hope to see you tomorrow.